So that happened to me one convention. I'll have to tell you that story sometime. But first, I want to say welcome from President Riccobono. President Riccobono would like to be at every convention, but of course, he can't be. So he sends people like me to hopefully represent him. And my job is twofold. I'm supposed to bring you news that you may not know about from the national body around the United States and, in fact, the world. But I'm also supposed to listen to you, and I'm supposed to come away with a report for him that will give him a better feel for what's going on in Delaware. What is it that you need? What is it that you dream about? What is it that you want the National Federation of the Blind to be in your chapter, in your state, and throughout the country? President Riccobono was not always the president. When I started in the organization back in 1972, the president was Dr. Jernigan. And then there was Ralph Sanders. And then there was Dr. Jernigan again. And then there was Mark Maurer, our longest serving president. And now there's President Riccobono. Well, when he was going around the country hinting that he might be president, I wanted a special way to introduce him. And I thought about how everybody always introduced him. They gave his biography, and I thought, I can do better than that. So I got a hold of his wife, and I said, could you make me a tape introducing your husband? Have you ever had the opportunity to introduce your husband at a state convention? And she said, no, and certainly not in Missouri. So, unbeknownst to him, we did this tape. It wasn't actually a tape, it was a digital thing, but I'll probably say tape for the rest of my life. And I brought this Bose acoustic wave system up to the microphone, and I set it on the podium, and I started to introduce President Riccobono, and I acted like I couldn't come up with the words. I fumbled around, and I said, "This really should be easy, but I just can't come up with it." And all of a sudden, Melissa Riccobono's voice interrupts, and she said, "Gary, if you're having trouble, let me see if I can take over and tell you something about this man you're about to hear from, who is a wonderful husband, a wonderful father, and a wonderful Federationist." And so at that point, President Riccobono was so surprised that they say that he cried a little bit. I could not get his secretary to take a picture of that. She didn't think it would be very flattering, but I actually thought that it was very flattering because it means that our president is rooted in not just federation values, as important as they are, but he's rooted in societal values. He's rooted in integration. The things that make a difference to him are the things that make a difference to us, which is what kind of world do we live in now? What kind of world do we want to live in? And how can we bring about the change that we want in the world without it being the thing that occupies our every living, breathing moment? Now, I want you to know that unlike a lot of big organizations, you can actually get a hold of our president. You can write to our president using email, and it's a pretty easy address. It's called Office of the President at, who can guess, nfb.org, right? NFB.org. So, what I'm going to talk about this morning will reference those addresses quite a bit. So, every time I talk about the website, I may not say HTTPS colon slash slash www.nfb.org. If you'll commit that to memory, if you'll make that the root, we'll go a lot faster. And if you will remember that the telephone number for the National Center is 410-659-9314, then I won't repeat that too often, and instead I'll just give you a four-digit extension where you can get a hold of people when you want to talk with them about issues, questions, victories, anything that you want of our national staff, we want to do for you if we can. Now, what I'm going to talk about with you this morning, it's not nationals programs. It's not nationals legislation. It's not nationals initiatives or policies. This is yours. And you in Delaware and me in Missouri and our buddies over in Kansas and then all of these swing states that they're talking about in the election, like Ohio and Pennsylvania, whatever, we all come together and we determine what our policies are going to be. We determine what needs doing and what kind of priority we're going to give to each of those things. I used to listen to these reports back in the 1970s, and for me, they were spellbinding. I don't know whether I'll be able to make this report spellbinding for you or not, but it was amazing for me to believe that I could belong to a little chapter in Warrensburg, Missouri, but that chapter, by belonging to the state affiliate and the national body, could have so much influence and so much potential to help blind people. And I was helping by every letter I wrote, by every PAC contribution I made, every time I did some little thing, it made a difference to this national movement that was shaping life for blind people. I never ever thought that when I watched people like Mark Maurer and Dick Edlund and Ralph Sanders and James Omvig and John Taylor and James Gashel and Kenneth Jernigan, as they came to our state to give the national report and the banquet speech, I never thought that I would be doing those kinds of things. But I knew that I wanted to make a contribution in some way. And I'll talk with you more about why that is in my banquet speech. But I was just delighted to meet these people and figure out that they were real because before they came to our national conventions, I saw them in the Braille monitor. And that was really cool. But the Braille monitor too often is a one-way communication. I got to hear what Kenneth Jernigan thought, but I didn't actually get to converse with Kenneth Jernigan until I was brave enough to call him. Until I got him to come to a national convention, I mean, a state convention, until he got me to come to a national convention. So, we're all about protecting and connecting blind people. And I'm going to tell you the same thing that everybody's telling you right now, which is please vote, vote safely, vote privately, vote independently. Not all of us are able to do that right now because the pandemic has made demands of our systems that have not been made before or have not been addressed, even if the demand has been made. One of the things we need to figure out is who has what experience when they vote. So when you vote, was it good? Was it mediocre? Was it bad? Did you get to vote privately and independently? Did you use the services of two judges? Did you bring somebody with you to the polls? Did it make you nervous in this highly divided America that we find ourselves in to have to disclose your vote? And were you absolutely sure that what you wanted to vote got put down? We've got a survey out there. It's at nfb.org/vote. So if I had just said slash vote, you would have implied the NFB website, right? We'd like you to fill that survey out. It's called the Blind Voter Survey. It's going to be available until after the election. If you've already voted, we want to hear from you. If you vote between now and November 3rd, we want to hear from you. And if you actually go vote on the day of November 3rd, how did it go? Were machines set up for you? Were you able to vote absentee if you went in early to your elector's office? So I don't want to beat a dead horse, but please help us with these surveys so that we have information to make for better voting experiences for blind people. You know, we've had a presidential release since, I believe, 1973, when Dr. Jernigan sent out his first cassettes. And we're coming up on presidential release 499. The presidential release, until recently, has been a rather one-way mechanism. You can write in and hopefully get stuff on the presidential release, but if you're going to ask questions, you got to ask them at a different time. Well, now we've got our presidential release, and it's live, and it happens on the first of every month. Well, those of you who don't have a Halloween hangover from tomorrow evening are invited to come on November the 1st at 8 Eastern and participate in the call. There are web links to Zoom so that you can participate in the call. If you need me to, I can look those up, but those appear on almost every medium in which we advertise. There have already been a number of postings to the listservs, and I'm sure that Kat can help you out also. But it will be at 8 o'clock. Most people will be muted, of course. If you have questions, however, that you want answered, you should send them to C. Danielson, CDANIELSEN, at nfb.org. Post your question and he'll make sure that President Riccobono gets it. You know, we're not too far away from 2021. I know there are a lot of Christmas bills yet to be accumulated, and we still haven't done Thanksgiving, one of my favorite holidays for sure. But 2021 is coming, and if you want to know about important dates in 2021, it's good to have a calendar. You can get a Braille calendar from the American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults. They have a website, which is actionfund.org, O-R-G, and you can order your calendars there. We'll give each person up to three calendars, one for work, one for home, one for your briefcase, maybe. I'm not sure quite how we arrived at the number of three, but we will do that, and we hope that you'll take advantage of the calendars. I remember as a kid getting the calendar, and the first thing I went to look up was when my birthday was going to be, and the next thing was when Christmas was going to be. So I was pretty gift-oriented, as you might understand. 2021 is going to bring for us the National Convention. We are urging that people watch the Braille monitor for details about the convention. We want you to watch our social media. We'll do all kinds of posts about it. There'll be a lot that we put on the listservs about the convention. At this point, we hope to meet in New Orleans. And we're looking for a record turnout there. You know that New Orleans has given us our record turnout. I think it was in 1997. But the pandemic is still the looming question. Will it be safe to travel? Will we be vaccinated? Will we feel comfortable assembling in large crowds? And so what we have to wrestle with is going forward and planning for things to return to normal, while at the same time keeping in mind that they may not, and knowing that we need to have a plan. So, with safety being one of our biggest priorities, we're doing planning for three different contingencies. One is a in-person convention. One is a virtual convention, like we had in 2020. And the third is a really interesting one, which is a hybrid convention where we have some Zoom and some other types of probably voting, but where we also have an in-person convention. And there's a lot to work out there about how you will do a hybrid convention. And I'm sure that that's one of the things that our National Board of Directors and our president are working on at the moment, trying to figure out what those opportunities will be and how we'll take the most of them or make the most of them. December is an issue of the Braille Monitor that many of you will know about because it has lots of announcements in it. It's the time when so many of our award programs open their applications. Actually, they open them November 1. We announce them in the December issue of the Monitor. But if you want to apply for a scholarship, applications are now being taken at nfb.org/scholarships. They open November 1, and we close that process on March 31st. If you are a student and you'd like to win anywhere from $3,000 to $12,000, you ought to fill out one of those applications. You end up getting about $2,000 in equipment and other awards. I don't know that anybody ever walks away from the convention with less than $5,000 and some merchandise. Lots of you know about our Dr. Jacob Bolotin Award. In this award, we celebrate individuals and organizations who are doing great work for blind people. We do that with a cash award. We do it with recognition. We try to put their name out all over the country. We get all the publicity we can. We're celebrating the life of Dr. Jacob Bolotin and people who want to be like him, people who are doing great things to advance the cause of blind people. Those applications are being taken as of November 1, and they will be taken through April 15. There is a book about the blind doctor. It's called The Blind Doctor, The Jacob Bolotin Story. It's available on NLS. It's available on Bookshare. It's also available at Amazon and any number of places that you might want to buy it. It's a great book. I had the pleasure of chairing the Jacob Bolotin Award for the first 3 years of its existence. That was a long time ago. We started in 2008, and I haven't chaired it since 2010. So I'm something of a has-been in terms of that award, but it's close to my heart. As you know, we've worked really hard to get people money to come to their first convention. We do that through the Kenneth Jernigan Awards Program. We raise money for that by selling tickets, and that money then goes to people who need help with plane tickets and hotels and other various grants. Again, applications are going to be open for it on the NFB website. You'll see more in the Braille Monitor about how you actually apply because there's more than just a straightforward application here. You have to talk with your affiliate president and get them to endorse what you're going to do, and you have to get yourself a mentor, but it's all laid out in the pages of the Braille Monitor, and it'll be in December. And in case you don't get that, it'll be in January and then February and then March. I think we may run that up until May. I should tell you that I'm the editor of the Braille Monitor, so I plug the Braille Monitor a lot, but it's not because I'm the editor. It's because the Braille Monitor, from the time that I became a Federationist in 1972, has been the thing that ties me most closely to what we're doing nationally, that makes me realize that as important as my little chapter is, we have a lot more importance through leverage, and that leverage comes through knowing more people and having more resources. And so I hope that if you're not readers of the Braille Monitor, you will write down my email address, which is gwunder, GWUNDER, at nfb.org. And we can talk about all of the different ways that you might get the magazine. You can get it in Braille. You can get it in large print. You can get it in an audio format that comes on a flash drive that will go into your NLS player. You can get it on Newsline. You can get it as a podcast. if you're not getting it, it's not because there aren't a number of resources available for you to get it. And we have lots of other publications too. Of course, we have the Voice of the Nation's Blind. We have our blog and our podcasts. We have our social media presence on Facebook and on Twitter. And all of this is a way of interacting so that you know what your federation is doing, and also so that you have a way to have input into that. We're sponsoring the Braille Readers or Leaders contest again this year. You know, we sponsored it for a long time, and then for a while it was off, and then Illinois took it up again and got it going, and now we're being assisted by the American Action Fund with that. Again, there were some details in the Braille Monitor, and there will be more as we go along. I believe that contest opens up November 1st, and it runs through February 1st, and it counts all of the pages that you've read, and there's different awards for different people, different categories of people. You know, diversity is terribly important in our organization, just like it is around the country. We have to get new members, and we have to get them from all kinds of groups who have traditionally not been very well represented in the National Federation of the Blind. It's great that Gary Wunder is a white Christian male, and we need all the white Christian males we can get, and all the females too. But we need people from other religions, and we need people from other ethnic backgrounds. And we not only want to invite them to our federation, but we want to make sure that when they come in, they understand that it becomes their federation. And they have as much say as those of us who have been here longer. And we want to meet the real legitimate needs, not just of people like Gary Wunder, who have a story to tell, but whose story is mostly now history. But we need people whose present we can influence, whose future will be determined by what they say they need, and how we're all able to work together to make this happen. Now, not only do we have to recruit new members, but we have to make sure that the members we have feel like they have a job. If you don't feel invested in a thing, if you don't feel that you're a part of something larger than yourself, you won't stay around. That's just the way it is. And if you don't find two or three people that you consider good friends, you're not likely to stay. So, although we've got to put a lot of emphasis on getting people, we've got to really think about how do we bring out the best in the folks that we have? How do we make them come to realize that the success or failure of the Federation has a lot to do with them? And some of that falls on leadership to make assignments, but some of it also falls on us to tell leadership what we would like to do, what we're good at. There's no task that's too small. If you work on a phone tree and the biggest thing that you do every month is call 15 people and let them know about a meeting, that's a big deal because it may determine whether or not they come. I want to remind everybody who is a chapter and an affiliate leader that when you get new members, we need you to fill out our new member form, which of course is available on our website. Kat has the information about how you sign new members up. We want to sign them up. We want to get them a coin. We want to get them involved in regular membership mailings, and we think that's a good thing. Lots of people have asked us, can we have something like pledge cards? And we've developed those now. They're available from the independence market. On one side of the card is our 1 minute message in large print, and on the other side, it's in Braille. You get it from the independence market. It is an option on the main menu. Again, that national number, 659, I mean, 410, 659, 9314, and then listen for the independence market. In our outreach for blind people, We've got to get on radio and television. And one of the easiest ways to do that is through public service announcements. Now, we can make those public service announcements available, and we can pay people to do some distribution. Sometimes that's helpful. But what is most helpful is if you contact radio stations and television stations in your area, tell them about how important the National Federation of the Blind is to you, and let them know that you've got a PSA for them if they'll let you send it. You can find these PSAs at nfb.org/PSAs, PSAS, and they are available. But again, how effective we are really depends on whether you take the time, once the enthusiasm of this convention dies down, to on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of next week. Maybe you can wait till after the election if you want to, but at some time soon, give your stations a call. And also use this opportunity to find out what kind of local programming they do, because lots of stations will gobble up interviews with blind people. Sometimes they'll want to talk with you about what you want to talk about, like critical things such as parental rights legislation and the ability to get a good education in college. And sometimes they'll want to talk with you about things that you kind of consider a little trivial, like when you dream, do you see in your dreams? Do you dream in color? What is it like for you? How in the world do you go to an airport by yourself? All of those things are really cool because you got to reach people where they are. And if they have a question, it's worth us answering. I mentioned parental rights legislation. I don't think Delaware is on the list as one of the states that has it. But you know, we encounter discrimination as blind parents in all kinds of things. We're discriminated against by the courts, who assume that we can't take care of children. And if we're in a battle with a sighted person, very often it's an uphill battle where our disability becomes central to whether or not we get reasonable custody arrangements. Adoption agencies very often make us meet a higher bar. They would generally prefer to give to families who are not blind or have disabilities because they don't understand. When it comes to guardian ad litems, they don't often understand what we can do. So when they go to advocate for the best interest of the child, too often they advocate against us. We need to change that. Social service agencies are not always on our side. They're not as informed as they should be. You may remember that Missouri made a videotape specifically for social service agencies, and it can be found out there on the web also. And then there are people that you meet in the hospital, so that it is unfortunately all too common for blind people to go to the hospital and be contacted by a social services worker because hospital personnel are afraid to send newborn children home alone with blind parents. It shouldn't be that way, and the only way we're going to change it is by working hard on it. Now, we do lots of legal issues. We're known for suing people, but the truth is that we take on a number of cases only after we've tried to resolve those cases with the individuals and companies involved. We realize that legal issues are really, really tricky because if you get a big win, that's great. That becomes precedent, and other courts rely on that in future decisions. But if you get a loss, the same thing happens, and it can work against you. So doing the legal thing is usually what we do as a last resort. In court, you know, you're asking people with the least interest to decide your issue. So if Milton Oda and I have a dispute, both Milton and I are more interested than the court is. So we only come to the court if we can't work it out. Courts are expensive, and again, their results can be very good or very bad. If you're thinking about doing a court case, we want you to coordinate with us nationally because it isn't just whether or not you win a case for the state of Delaware. That case will be used as precedent across the country. So please, I want you to call our paralegal if you're considering legal action. That is Valerie Yingling, Valerie Yingling. You'll never talk with a nicer person than Valerie. And I want you to get her number in your head. It's 2440, 2440. And talk with her about legal issues that you're contemplating. She'll see that it gets to President Riccobono. If you want to see the legal issues that we now have underway, again, I refer you some to the Braille Monitor, some to our releases, but you can go to our website, nfb.org/legal, and you'll find them there. We have all kinds of cases, and I think you really would be quite inspired to look at some. We've been working with the IRS because it refuses to contact people in an accessible format. And that's a real big issue if they're trying to tell you that you owe taxes or that you owe additional taxes, and that if you don't pay, they're going to charge you interest and penalties. We finally got them to admit that they need to contact us in accessible formats, which will include Braille. That won't begin, unfortunately, until January 31 of 2022. But everything has to have a beginning point, and we've been fighting this for years. We've also made significant progress in working with tax preparation services so that you can fill out your forms online and you don't have to rely on somebody else to help you with the printed form. We've also been working with the Social Security Administration. They require what they call wet signatures for many documents that they have. Well, many of us have some trouble with signatures as it is, and we would prefer an electronic signature, especially in these times where going to a public office may be to risk your life. We've even had trouble with the intake process at Social Security, where you go and you see a kiosks, and in order to get into the queue to see people about whatever you want to see, you have to use an inaccessible kiosk to get the attention of the service. So we're working on that, and we think we're making really good progress to make those kiosks talk. If you heard Eve Hill at the convention this year, she talked about the fact that there are too many websites that are being created every day that aren't usable by the blind. And although we'd like to deal with every offender, we can't always do that. There are just too many websites that are being created. So what we're doing is going to the source of a lot of those websites, the people who make what are called web authoring tools, and they sell services and websites. If you've used services like GoDaddy, and other web authoring tools, and you found them less than accessible, I'd like you to talk with Valerie Yingling about that. Again, 2440. Let her know what your problem was. Job search engines are all too inaccessible. And of course, most of us know that that's the way you get jobs these days. It's the way that you sometimes take pre-employment tests. If you've had trouble with places like ZipRecruiter or Caliper or Indeed, they get a lot of play on the radio, but they may not be as friendly to your screen reader as you need them to be. We need to work with those companies. And again, Valerie is your contact, Valerie Yingling. If you've been laid off and have tried for unemployment benefits, we want to know about that. How accessible was that process? Using your screen reader. If you've had trouble using Uber or Lyft, what has been your experience, good or bad? I mentioned to you already the voter survey. We're doing a survey right now about education technology, and this is one that we'd like people to do every semester if you're involved in education, if you're a parent, if you're a teacher, if you're an administrator, if you're a student, please fill it out once a semester and let us know how accessible you find things, what you use that worked, what you use that didn't work. We're doing a travel survey. Now, I know that many of us have not been traveling much with the pandemic, but we'd like to know how you find various travel sites that you use on the internet. If they're good sites, let us know so we can advertise them. If they're poor sites that you can't get around without the help of somebody with sight, we need to know about those too. And I'll let you guess who you would contact about that and what her extension might be. And if you guess 2440, you've won the lottery. We do a lot of legislation. I'll summarize some of it here, but you can go to our website and you can find all of the legislation that we have and the current bill sponsors and the things that we're being advocates for. If you need sponsors from your state specifically, I'd urge you to contact Jessa Medders. That's JESA MEDERS. And her address is J Medders, JMEDERS at, and you can guess the rest, NFB.org. She can bring you right up to date. We're still working. It's getting late in the session, I know, and the chances of some of our legislation passing grows dimmer every day that we are locked up with election year politics and pandemic stalls and all kinds of things. But the more co-sponsors we can get, the better off we are. We're looking at the Accessibility Technology Affordability Act, the ATAA. You know about it already, I'm sure. It's where we ask that there be a $2,000 refundable tax credit for blind people who want to buy our own technology. It's a program that's set to run for 5 years, and if it's a good program, we're hoping that it'll be renewed. There's lots of enthusiasm for that. We're getting increases every week in the Senate and the House. I don't want to take time now to go over those numbers, but I want to say that you can canvass your Delaware delegation and figure out if your senators and representatives are there. There's something called Sammy's Law that we're very involved in. It's H.R. 4686. It's a law that intends to see that when you go and request a ride share, that before you get into that ride share vehicle, you actually know that that ride has been sent for you. Sammy's Law came about, or it was initiated as a result of a death by somebody getting into the wrong car. We want to make sure that the techniques that are used to verify whether or not we're to get into the car are in fact accessible to blind people. We've had good luck with that. We hope we can get it passed. President Rick Obono has recently sent a letter to Senator John Cornyn informing him that although we like the Safe to Work Act, we don't like the fact that he wants to pull up provisions of the Americans with Disabilities Act out of that law. We want that changed, and we won't stand for it being any other way. You know about the Greater Access Through Independent Non-Visual Technology, the GAIN Act. It's H.R. 3929. It covers everything from consumer electronics to medical equipment to exercise devices. All of this digital technology that we have is wonderful, but the fact of the matter is that if it's not accessible, we're out in the cold. And we're in worse shape than when things had knobs and levers and other things. We know from our iPhones and we know from our computers that things can be made accessible, that the world can be made ever more independent for us, and we want that to happen. We're interested in accessible technology for people who are involved in education. I know many of you know about the Aim High Act. If not, There's a big write-up about it in the November issue of the Braille Monitor, and there was a big write-up in the February, I'm sorry, in the March issue about it as well. I think it's tremendously important. If you can't compete in the digital age, you can't compete in schools. I see that my time is sort of drifting away here, so I just want to try to finish up by saying to you that we run lots of programs and they're all available for you to look at on our website. Some of them you'll be very familiar with, like our Bell Academy. Some of them you may be less familiar with, like our early childhood initiatives, our programs to foster literacy. The work we do to see that there's a national reading media assessment so that people can figure out whether to learn print, Braille, or both. And there is a big write-up in the November issue of the Braille Monitor about just what happens to kids when we waste so much time figuring out how that they're going to read that in fact we don't teach them to read. You know about NFB Newsline, I hope. I'm not sure whether Delaware is a sponsored program. If not, I hope that you will be. Please know that our independence market is back open. We do canes and watches and writing materials. We've got high tech, we've got low tech, we've got everything that you might need. All of this that we have comes with a cost. And nobody really likes to talk about money, but the fact is that you've got to. And so, for a moment, I want to share with you where Delaware stands in terms of some of our programs for raising money. So, Delaware is on our PAC program, where every month so much is deducted from your bank account. Whatever you tell us you'd like to give. I think the minimum is $5 a month that you can give. And it's a great way to give that is painless. In the country, I have the year-to-date rankings up to the 1st of October. Delaware. Is 46 in the country. That's not too bad, but I think that you'll find some things interesting. You'll actually be able to move up if you want to. What is going on here? What's going on here is that I'm messing up. So Delaware is number 46. You give annualized $1,030. You have five people on PAC. I think your contribution is $115 a month. So some of you who are quite committed are really involved in helping out. Now, the question is, can you move up any? Well, yeah, you probably can. Nevada is right ahead of you, and you can move beyond them. By they're giving $15 a month. Oh, I'm sorry, they got 15 people. $1,670 or 250. You might be able to jump them. I think I really should relinquish back the balance of my time and work out these figures so that they're a little more understandable. And maybe, Kat, if you have some time between now and the banquet, I can give you these figures and show you how you may be able to increase your ranking sometimes in these programs by four or five places just by increasing $5 or $10. My apology for sort of botching these figures, but I'll get them in order. They looked in order yesterday, but I didn't look at them again this morning, and they're not looking so good now. But I'll get them in a way where I can read them and you can understand them. I'd like to thank you all for listening to me. I hope that you've learned something. I hope that you've taken notes. And I hope that you'll remember that if there is something that I said that you don't understand, my address is gwunder@nfb.org. And I'm not only here this weekend for you, but I'm available to help you anytime during the year that you need. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. That was a very informative speech. And yes, we do have time for you to reconfigure your figures and give us the correct figures after our 310 to 340 presentation. Without